Welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast, featuring interviews with incredible working artists who are also mothers and compelling conversations regarding parenting and the art world. These conversations create a space for inclusivity and support for artist mothers worldwide. I'm Kaylin Butine, painter, mom of three, and podcast host. I'm so grateful you are tuning in, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
After Marzi, I realized that I'm not going to do this. I'm just going to, you know, take it easy, just do an hour or two a day. As long as I get that 1 hour or two in the studio, when needed, you know, when there's a project coming up, I can get more time. But on the regular, because I'm very consistent, I'm always painting. I always feel like, I say this to Abid all the time, I'm a turtle. I will always be here. But I will be slow, but I'll always be here. So I just slowly keep doing what I'm doing.
Today, I am so excited to welcome Sarah Khan to the Artist Mother Podcast. Sarah was born in Birmingham, England in 1984 and raised in Lahore, Pakistan. She holds a BFA with honors from the National College of Arts, Lahore, and she was one of 13 international artists selected for the BAG Art Camp, an international art residency in Bergen, Norway. She was also one of 23 artists selected for the Vancouver Mural Festival in 2018. Sarah's works have been featured in several national and international group exhibitions, in addition to her first solo show in Canada at the Surrey Art Gallery in 2019. Some recent group shows include Terrestrial Beings at the Esplanade Art and Heritage Center in Medicine Hat, Canada, and What is Seen and Not Seen, With or Without Seeing, at the Gandhara Art Space in Karachi, Pakistan. Her work has also been featured in the book A Big Important Artist, A Womanual, by the jealous curator Danielle Crissa. Sarah lives and works in Vancouver, Canada, with her partner and I believe two kids, but I'll ask her to be sure. Sarah, thank you so much for joining me today. Welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast.
Thank you for having me, Kaylin. I love this podcast.
So I think you have two kids. You were saying before we started recording that one of them is like the same age as the Artist Mother Podcast, which is so cool.
Yes, I do have two kids. My daughter was born around the same time you started your podcast.
Which I guess
both our children are five now.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I guess, because I hadn't really like thought about that, but I guess I had my youngest around the time I was starting the podcast too, which kind of seems crazy. He'll turn six in May.
There
so
you go. Yeah,
maybe he was like a baby, but you know.
Yeah. Still. At a point where you could possibly do something.
Yes.
You know, because in the first few months you really can't.
No. Yes.
Yeah.
So you have a 5-year-old, and then how old is your other kiddo?
My other kiddo is now almost two, so he's 2 months from two.
Okay. I thought he was younger, but I just wanted to make sure.
Yeah. He is now 21 or 22 months. I always forget this months thing, but
Awesome. Well, we have lots to talk about. I'm really excited. And I know I mentioned to you already that you're an artist that I feel like I've followed for so long, and you've just been somebody that I'm like, someday I'm going to interview her, and today's the day. So
it's a good, it's a good time, because I think before, and initially when we got connected, I'd done the podcast with Jealous Curator. So now things have sort of progressed from there, and we'll have much more to talk about. Otherwise, it would have been the same conversation.
Yes. And I think you did a takeover on the Artist
I've done lots
Instagram.
Of stuff with you guys.
I
did a takeover, and then two of my friends and I did a motherhood themed show here.
Catherine Duclos.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
And yes, exactly. And Laura.
Laura.
We did.
That's right.
Yes, we did a show here in North Van, and we did a takeover then too.
Amazing.
So
awesome.
We have been connected for quite a while.
Yes. All right, Sarah. Well, I always like to start by having you share something about your childhood that you feel like connects to your life as an artist today. I always want to know if people you know, kind of had capital A artist as a career on their radar, or if that was something you found like a little later on.
Yeah, I feel like my family was very encouraging. I was very privileged that way. I mean, you know, as kids, we all draw and paint, but my parents were very encouraging. My dad would bring these beautiful children's storybooks that I love the illustrations in. And then my mom would make sure she was never extravagant. My mom and her family, they're very, very not about any kind of extravagances. They'd always say, we don't celebrate birthdays, that kind of thing.
Okay.
Which I love about them.
Yeah.
But she would make sure that I always had, you know, art materials. She made sure I had these really fancy set of crayons always on me, papers, sketchbooks, etc. So I think she was very, I get this feeling, you know, that generation didn't get a chance to explore these kind of things. I get this feeling that she was herself quite into, she was interested in creativity, but didn't get to play around with it. So both of them encouraged me. I always laugh about this. One of my uncles still has like a one of my paintings from when I was eight or something hanging in his house. His wife, my aunt, often sends me that picture. It travels with them to different houses even.
Oh, so that's so sweet.
Yeah, they were encouraging. And then also I keep thinking about this thing recently. I've still thought about this. My work has a lot of duplicity in it. And I think that comes from, like, I have these, you know, I'd have these nightmares when I was very little. And I didn't know what to do about them and how to, you know, go around them. And we had a lot of kids in the house. So I think the elders would always be busy. So I was the eldest. So I didn't know how to resolve this problem. At some point, I realized when I woke up and I changed the ending of the nightmare into something funny, it made things better. And I think I started doing that with my paintings and drawings as well. And I still do to some extent, not with nightmares maybe, but the things that's going on around me that worry me or upset me or sort of, you know, change that into something beautiful or something. So I think that also started a long time ago.
That's amazing. I love that idea of, you know, taking something that brings you fear, anxiety, and kind of beautifying it, or, you know, reimagining it. And in a way, I feel like it's like you're taking that control back. Like you're kind of using your art skills to say, no, I will shape this narrative, you know, this nightmare, which is, 100%. I think, what a lot of artists do.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's really interesting to think about that
idea. You just never know where that, you know, where that sort of springs, you know, starts in you. But I think we all tend to do that. Yeah, I think we somehow, that's our way of getting through life in a way, you know, sort of turning things around for yourself.
Absolutely. Would you say that's kind of what your work is still about now? Like, what are some of the themes or major points that you sort of conceptually make work about?
Yeah, I feel like because my work is quite autobiographical in the sense that I take from the things around me. I love jotting down notes and putting down quotes from books I'm reading, or you know, literally discussions I'm having with family or friends. My husband, I'll jot it down. So it's a lot of stuff, whatever experiences I'm going through. When I moved to Vancouver, there was that whole, you know, moving from one place you've grown up into another. That was obviously on my mind a lot, being in two places in one at the same time. And then whenever I'd go to Lahore, it would feel like that was my real life, inverted commas. And then when I'd come here, I'd feel the same way, like this was my real life. So sort of bridging that gap, or sort of balancing both the lives, or and then whatever my thoughts about that were, I'd sort of put them down on paper. So it'd be this, it's the same with motherhood. Whatever I was going through, I started putting the thing I found very, very difficult, because I moved to Vancouver and fell in love with it very quickly. But when I had my daughter, in 2019, and I went back home to spend time with my family, to take some time off. My mom had come here to help, and then we went back together. I found it very hard to come back. And that kind of stuff, you know, being in two places at the same time, finding it hard. The idea, as some people would say, a lot of people here would say, you need a village, you need a village. And I'd be like, that's the only way I know. I think that's why I'm having such a struggle, because back in Pakistan, everybody does it like that. Because you have like aunts and mom and grannies and everybody, uncles, everybody helping out. So I had a very hard time with that. And then, so when I moved here, when I came back, I started making work about that. So it's always, you know, and then seeing how much wonderful stuff I have to rely on here, you know, my husband and my bond is very, very strong. I have done everything with my children that I would have missed out on back home. So you have to see pros and cons, you know. There are certain things that work here, and there are certain things that work there. And I'm lucky that I'm able to be a part of both of them. But yeah, those moments where, you know, it's very, very hard. It feels like a huge blessing, a huge gift that I'm able to then just sit by myself. I don't need to rely on anybody else, and make something with simple material such as a pencil and a paper, and then sort of comfort myself through it. And sometimes the stuff that I'm making will connect with other people, because we're all going through very similar experiences, right?
Absolutely.
Sometimes it's funny stuff. I'll be having a discussion with Abed, just humoring, and he'll humor me. I'll be saying something to him about, what if I, you know, this was before having kids, what if I give birth to kittens instead of a child? And then the discussion will just go somewhere absurd, and, you know, painting will come out of it. But a lot of the times it's, it's even, you know, when worrying stuff around the world happens, how do you, you know, sometimes you get so infuriated, you don't know what to do with all the information you're getting, and you put it down on paper, and it's not going to change anything, but it just, you know, to try to keep your, at least your energy up.
Absolutely.
So I think, mostly it is exactly the same thing as I was doing as a child.
So many things I want to come back to and ask you more about. But one thing as you were talking, I was reminded of, and I'm not going to be able to remember the artist in this moment, but a Korean-American artist who has this one piece that was in a virtual show that we had put together several years ago. But it was kind of about the duplicity of, you know, being Korean and American and having that kind of immigrant story and that idea of like holding so tightly and belonging to like multiple identities in terms of like nationality, and how that translates so well to the maternal identity, because you're like, you're this one person, but then also you learn this whole new like set of rules and customs and like how to like be, and, you know, kind of hearing you process, like, it was just reminding me of that work and how, you know, there's just so much like nuance in navigating those different spaces. And so I was wondering, just to clarify, you were born in the UK, but then you were raised in Pakistan. And did you immigrate to Canada as an adult by yourself, or like, and your parents are still in Pakistan, or can you just clarify that a little bit?
Yes, of course. So my parents were in England for a short period of time. I think my father tried to make a go of it, and then he said, no, I'm a Lahori, I need to go back to Lahore. And they moved back. And so I grew up in Lahore. Okay. And then I got married to my husband and moved to Vancouver 10 years ago.
Yes. Okay. So you
and by the way, exactly 10 years ago.
Like, oh, wow. So you moved together, completely removing your...
So Abid already lived here. He has been here for more than 20 years now. He came here high school age and with his family. And then his family, his parents also moved around because of his dad's work. So they have settled in Pakistan now as well. So all our family is back in Pakistan. But I got married to Abid and I came here because, you know, artists can work anywhere.
Yes.
and then I've been here since. And yeah, all our family is there, which is why I think the children thing, that village thing, became more pronounced because we don't have anybody here who could help out.
Yeah, that. So that's another point that I just would love to like talk with you a little bit more, especially because I was actually recently having a conversation with a good friend, another artist parent, and we were kind of talking about how in our marriage, there's been these times where both she and I, but I'll just speak from my own perspective. You know, my husband and I, we got married super young and we moved to where he was committed to a graduate program. So we had 2 years in Georgia. I'm from New York State. And then we moved back to New York and we were there for a few years. And then we decided to move away again. And both of those transitions for me were like so hard. And we had already had a kid when we moved from New York to Tennessee. They were so hard, but I also, what I was talking about with my friend was that you know, there's this like idea in American culture that like the nuclear family, like it's not a village culture. It's very, you move wherever you want, wherever's best for your job, like you and your partner, or you as like a solo career person, you just like figure it out and make a life for yourself. Like that's the quote unquote, like American dream. Right. But, you know, I think, as somebody who my values don't always align with American culture, one of the things that I'm always kind of looking at other cultures and like admiring is more like a multi-generational living situation where people have more of a village culture. But what was interesting was I was having this conversation with my friend was that I was saying, so like I have that on one hand, like I firmly believe that like in the concept of village culture and like having my mom and my sister like there every day or every week, you know? But then I also think that like my marriage is so much better because of those times that we had to rely on just each other.
Yeah.
And I don't know like how to reconcile that. Cause I'm I can be very like, you know, kind of it's one way or the other way. Of course, it's like all gray, right? There's no right or wrong way. But you were speaking about, you can see these pros and cons. And like that has been exactly my experience is, you know, because sometimes I like think, should we move back to where family is? Or would that like be better for us? And then I'm like, John and I are so good and we're so strong right now. And I really think a lot of that is because of those times where we didn't live right next to family because we couldn't fall into like these patterns of codependency, like, you know, even like my parents' generation, some of the behaviors and things that I don't always love about that generation, it's not as like we have a bit more of a boundary around some of those things.
Yeah. And communication, like you can't avoid communication. If you want to keep going together and keep growing together, because it's very easy to sort of just zone out of your relationship and, you know, look elsewhere and then not grow, then you miss out on growing together.
Yes.
So I feel like, it is I had to sort of, when I came back with Marzia and with Tufan, I mean, with Tufan, it was easier. But when I came back with Marzia, it was a real, like, I had to switch my mind off and remind myself that this is what it's meant to be like for me. This is meant to be my life. I am meant to do this by myself, and I am meant to do it with Abid, and we can make it happen. Mm-hmm. So it was like, you know, I had to keep reminding myself every time I slipped into that, you know, that crazy cycle of thinking, you know, why am I here? I'm not supposed to be here. I'm meant to raise these kids amongst my family. They all love them so much, so on and so forth. I had to keep reminding myself. Yeah, I mean, it's incredible the way it is back. In Pakistan, you know, everybody involved. But then that can also be difficult, you know. Sometimes you want to do certain things with your kids a certain way. And, you know, you might, I mean, my parents are, my mom is very, very, she's not at all interfering at all. Mm-hmm. But there, you know, there'll be people who say certain things, and then you know, you get sort of double-minded because you're also new at it, and you don't know, you know, if you really should sit. I'm not very assertive, even so. Yeah. If you really should, you know. Thankfully, both our moms are pretty chill, so they don't sort of. But you know what? I think, Aileen, there has to be like a middle. Like both the cultures are too like. You know, one is two on top of each other, and the other is two, like, do it all by yourself, you know?
Yes.
And
yes.
I think community is like everything. Like, I've been able to find a community here, and it's given me so much. Like, I've grown so much because of, you know, the people I found here. So I think it's very important. I think this whole idea of, you know, it's a little 1984 that, you know, you're all alone and you're all doing things on your own, and there is no, like, taking community and love away actually is a dystopia in a way, right?
Yes.
Like, you don't have, I mean, you know, it's not that extreme for us, obviously, or at all that extreme, but that is what brings us light, right? And
Yeah, but then it's also like this balance, because it's so easy to, I mean, I think I'm kind of transitioning to thinking about like my artist identity too. Like, I really need a lot of solitude and, you know, kind of, it's like, as a person, and like a lot of my insecurities, I think, are really connected to, you know, needing strong relationships and being in community. And, you know, I get a lot of like confidence from being in connection with people. But then I also, like, as an artist,
your energy just comes
my
from
energy
being on
your heart. I do have to like balance that. Like, I've come to realize I'm truly an extroverted person, because I get energy from others and I get confidence from others. But then I think as an artist, there are just certain tanks that you cannot fill from other people. You have to fill them yourself, you know?
Yeah.
And so, I don't know. I've been thinking a lot about that, especially at this phase in my life where, you know, I know so many people. I have this like kind of big network of like acquaintances, like artist friends. But in person, like artist friends, you know, there's like a smaller amount. But then I'm also like, but how many friends do I even need? Like, maybe I have enough. And like, what I really need to be doing is just protecting my time, you know?
Yes, you have to. Yeah, you have to find that. I think my friends really make fun of me a lot, because they say I have this list. And it's this small, and I they laugh.
Either
that
they're
one
on
of us,
it, or they're not on the list.
They laugh that one of us has to die before she brings somebody else on, and I'm not that bad. But yeah, you do have to, because I am actually more introverted in the sense that I don't know if I'm more introverted, but I just love that I know that this is what I love the most, being the studio. And because when you have little kids, it's harder to have so much studio time. But at this point, I know I'll have to give up on studio time to be any kind of extroverted or do any kind of extroverted behavior. So it depends. There are, of course, days when you have to get out and have to do things. But at this stage in my life, I know exactly what you mean. That I think we're also reaching that age where we want to protect our time. So you sort of start letting go of things that don't mean that much. So, you know, like you said, acquaintances and stuff, they sort of just
float
away and it's fine. You know, it's all good. So yeah, that balance is really necessary.
I think too, like you mentioned, like we're at this age, and I think one of the things that I'm learning is I just like know myself better than I ever have before. And so I know more what I need and like what's going to work for me. Whereas even a few years ago, I was still kind of like, oh, maybe that's a good idea. Or maybe I should do that. Or maybe that's like, you know, and now it's like, it's just like, I just know more like what's going to work for me, you know?
Yeah. It's like the priorities are so much more clearer. Right?
Yes.
So then you're like, okay,
yes,
let's do this.
Yes. Okay. So let me hear a bit more about your process, what you actually make when you're in the studio, what materials you use, and if you'll describe what your work typically looks like. You know, for folks who haven't seen it.
So my process is like at the beginning of a project or a body of work, I'll collect a lot of stuff, like, you know, whatever books that have resonated with me, I'll jot down notes from there. I do a lot of sketches and drawings, so there'll be lots of little drawings and sketches just to figure out what my mind is obsessing about the most. And then there'll be a lot of my work is very drawing based, so there'll be a lot of drawing, and I'll come up with compositions that I want to maybe build on. Maybe I want them to be larger, and depending on how large I want to go, I'll decide on the medium. Mostly it's water-based mediums on paper. I love that medium. Mm-hmm. I like to build stories on the paper, like, you know, the internal dialogue that's going on in my head about some situation. And I love the layers that it provides me. And every layer sort of seeps through the other, and you can see what's been put behind. So I love the idea of hidden things and different perspectives sort of showing through those layers. I love washes and drawing, so it's quite translucent that way. And then it's very drawing based, and then the other thing that I really aim for is creating an atmosphere that is inviting and beautiful but also unsettling, because that's how I see the world, and that's what I want to sort of depict. I think that is when something is inviting and seductive and unsettling, I feel like that's where the beauty and magic lies. If it's something purely one thing, one side of the coin, or just, you know, like we said, black or white, I feel like it doesn't have as much, at least, attraction for me. So there is that. And then when I read 100 Years of Solitude back in the day, it really took some, like, it really sat in my heart, and really, it gave me something really big to think about, how, you know, the world can be perceived. Like, magic realism became a really big way of me to sort of convert stories onto paper. Through this eye of, you know, something very ordinary happening turns into something slightly magical, and how that sort of, you know, shifts everything, makes everything a little almost like absurd, slightly confusing, but comes together somehow. I like the idea of giving very ordinary moments in time, like, you know, brushing your teeth or sitting and having dinner, and it becomes something more than just an ordinary moment, because I feel like that's where it's at as well, like, when I living through day to day with my kids, with my husband, before with my, you know, my original family, I feel like those moments are actually where it's, you know, having dinner together or cracking up, laughing about, you know, that's where the magic is. So giving it that kind of lens or that kind of focus.
I love the connection to magical realism too, because I definitely think there's almost like a storybook quality to your work. Like,
Yes.
That's beyond illustration, like definitely a connection to like an illustrative quality, but I think like imagined spaces or like a mat.
Imagined spaces,
Yeah,
exactly.
there's.
And you know, people turning into human animal hybrids. So
Yes.
things that you don't expect happening in a very ordinary landscape or
Yeah.
the unexpected, I'm very interested in. So yeah, they have an illustrative quality, but they're very open to interpretation. I want them to be very open to interpretation. So when you see them, you can, you know, find yourself in them.
Also, I think definitely like your palette is beautiful, but pattern seems like really important to you, like lots of textures and patterns that you're kind of always playing with, which is like something I love about your work.
Yes.
A lot of patterns that look inspired by the landscape.
Yes. I also love definitely, yeah, because my foliage is a bit almost becomes and turns into to pattern.
Yeah.
I think you know how they say like even chaos has a pattern, you know,
yes.
everything has
Yeah.
a pattern. So
Yeah.
I think I'm drawn to patterns that way, but also also obvious patterns because they just draw me in because of their colors and visuals. And I grew up in a very pattern, like, you know, patterns are crazy back in Lahore. I feel like they're sort of everywhere on our clothes and everything.
Yeah.
But other than that, yeah, I love turning landscapes into bodies, into
yes.
patterns, into, so everything sort of comes together to form one one picture. I love everything becoming one.
I love that too about your work. Do you do any paper cut or collage? Because I also like just, you know, aesthetically, one thing I love about your work is there's always this like slightly confusing edge. Like I'm like, where does that medium end and this one begin? And how did she kind of like, I think that's one of the most like beautiful things about your work, these layers that you create. So I'm wondering if it's mostly just water-based media on paper or if there's like collage or
So that's what's exciting for me, like you responding like that, because I like the viewer to be a little, you know,
yeah, totally
unsettled.
How
or
did she make
confused.
That?
How did she make that? Collage is usually what I do love collage. I do love working with collage. It's usually the little studies and drawings that I do that I'll have collage in them. When I'm painting on the larger pieces, there's no collage. But I like to paint it in such a way that you can almost not, you know, you want to touch it to see if you can, you know, roll your finger over it or not. So yeah, in the paintings, there's actually no, most of my paintings are just water-based mediums.
Amazing.
All of them actually are water-based mediums. And then I've started playing around with textiles and stuff now.
This episode is sponsored by the Thrive Together Network. TTN is a virtual community I run for women artists. We have a space right on the network for artist caregivers to connect, and it is truly my favorite place on the internet. Every Tuesday, I co-host a session called Art and Tea, where our community comes together to connect as artists. We share our goals and provide accountability for each other and talk about lots of topics artists deal with, ranging from how to put on an exhibition, organization tips for your studio, ways to manage stress, and so much more. The Thrive Together Network is an inclusive platform for artists, and so much is included in your membership. It's crazy. We offer 2 virtual art residencies a year to help you stay on track with your studio goals. We have an exhibition program called Taking Up Space, those Tuesday art and tea sessions that I mentioned. We have monthly workshops on art business, art writing. We even have a book club. Plus, there's hundreds of artists to connect with from all over the world. Because of the Artist Mother partnership with TTN, we have a discount code for you, just for artist caregivers to join the network. You can take $10 off your monthly membership fee for the Thrive Together Network, but your best deal is actually if you sign up for a year with us, commit to a whole year of joining us and joining our programming, and you'll save over $140 on your membership. So head to www.artistmotherpodcast.com/network to learn more and check it out. Membership comes with a free 2-week trial too, so you can truly get in there and see what you think before you actually commit to becoming a member. Just a reminder, on the network, we have a special group for artist caregivers where we have intentional conversations about our roles and identity as artists who are making work and balancing all of the caregiving that we do. We even have quarterly meetups for this group for deeper times of connections. I would really love to get to know you on the network, see more about your work and your art practice, and just connect with you in this amazing, compassionate, intentional, and encouraging community of female artists. We are all about providing resources to help you grow your art career, and this effort is combined with tools and the means to connect with the artists who are on a similar path, who are doing similar things with their careers. So once again, you can head to artistmotherpodcast.com/network to learn more, to get our discount code, and to join the Thrive Together Network. So I want to talk a little bit about some recent shows that you have had, and I know you've been collaborating and doing like some really exciting things. First, Sara, I was wondering about your studio practice. Like just, I think you mentioned you have a home-based studio, but I'm curious about kind of what is a week in the life look like? Like how often are you in the studio? How are you managing like childcare? Are your kids like right there alongside of you? Or is it like a room that you can close? Kind of thinking about how you're creating time and space for your practice.
Yeah. So for me, a home studio works best. I don't like leaving my house at all.
You have a very short list of exactly. Places you like to go and short list of people.
I'm not that bad. I'm really exaggerating, but I don't like leaving the house.
Yeah.
I tried it at some point earlier, you know, after college, and I prefer working from home. Mm-hmm. Abid and I share a workspace.
Okay.
So in the day, he works usually from 10 to 4-ish. And then when he comes down, we have a cup of tea and then I move up.
Okay.
And then I work for an hour and a half, 2 hours, however much I get. Mm-hmm. And then if I'm desperate to go back in, sometimes after dinner, when we sort of chilled out a bit, I'll come back up to do some more work. Usually that's how the days go. And Abel won't work on the weekends, but I continue working over the weekends as well.
Okay.
Unless, God forbid, I'm leaving the house. As you know. with Marzo, I was so desperate to work. So the thing with the, no matter what anybody tells you, the first time you have a kid, you don't know what's coming and you get like, I at least got really freaked out that I never get to work properly again because pre-Marzo, I was doing, you know, 24 hours in the studio or like working for as long as I wanted, especially once I moved here. In Lahore, I was distracted by, we're all on top of each other. We're all visiting each other all the time. So the social scene would distract me, conversations happening with friends, so on and so forth, family. And then I moved here and there was nothing. So I really realized that this is what, and that when I finally properly realized how much I loved this, because I could endlessly spend time with this and didn't care if, you know, I wasn't doing as much hanging out with the people I loved around me.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's usually our routine, but with post Marzo, I got a little freaked out because the first year with the baby is very, I found it very hard. Mm-hmm. And because that's the one time, I guess, Abid couldn't help with certain, you know, she can't breastfeed.
Right.
Marzia also wouldn't, like, she did that whole, for the first year, she woke up every 2 hours to breastfeed.
Even when her, so hard.
Even when her milk reduced through the day, at night it didn't. The first year was impossible to work. And so but I was desperate because that's the only way, like I said, I make, you know,
you felt like
I make
yourself.
Sense of the world. I put my, you know, the things that I'm getting frustrated by, I put them down on paper and I feel better. So that is when I started doing the Marzia log, for example. I started jotting down things about her in my notebook, which I didn't even realize the other day. I was thinking about it. It's been like 4.5, 5 years that I've been doing that for.
Amazing.
And it just, you know, putting something, you know, out there and for other moms to respond to, it was just such a great feeling. So if I'm not, like, and then after Marzia, I realized that she literally grew up so fast in that year that I felt like, I don't know what I was panicking about, which is always the case with every challenge I go through. I'm like, what was I panicking about? With Marzia, after Marzia, I realized that I'm not going to do this. I'm just going to, you know, take it easy. Just do an hour or two a day. As long as I get that 1 hour or two in the studio, when needed, you know, when there's a project coming up, I can get more time. But on the regular, because I'm very consistent, I'm always painting. I always feel like I say this to Abid all the time. I'm a turtle. I will always be here, but I will be slow, but I'll always be here. So I just slowly keep doing what I'm doing. I'm always ready for, you know, if somebody wants to do a studio visit, I make sure I always have something going. Just because I love it. I love having a studio full of things. And I, as a little kid, I used to do the same. I used to have the little folder and I just keep putting drawings in the little folder. But I can't do it, like, you know, I need to get away for weeks to work. I don't want to miss out on anything they're doing. Like, I love the fact that I work here and I can hear them cackling downstairs with Abid, you know, they're going to be stuck to me only for a little while. And I want to just enjoy every bit of it.
I love that perspective. Cause I think it's so hard when we have sort of these dreams of our own and these things that we want to do, and we have this like motivation that we've built up and this confidence that we've built up around, you know, this thing that we do that brings us so much joy. And then, you know, like, you become a parent and it just feels like those two things are like working against each other. I think there's no like perfect way to, like, I think a lot of people who listen to this podcast, you know, they want the like solution. Like, how can I make all this fit? Like these like puzzle pieces that like, they're just not working on now. Like how do I get them like back in order? And it's like you said, I just think for the, especially like the early childhood years, there's no way for it all to fit, you know?
No, like with Marzia used to be in my studio. When I wanted to work, and Abid at that point was working from outside, or leaving the house to work, she used to come and she used to just work next to me. She still does. In the evening, I have that 1 hour and I'm like, okay, I need that 1 hour, but she'll come up and I don't want to stop her because I know I love it too, you know? And she's good that way, that she'll remain quiet. You know, if I'm listening to something, she'll be quiet. Tufan's never been in my studio because he's a wildling. I can't have it. So it depends on the kitten as well, right?
Totally.
It depends. If you feel like, okay, I mean, when he's maybe a little older, maybe it'll be different. But so you have to sort of like, it's so go with the flow, in the sense, you know, something will fit in and something won't. So you have to keep trying different, like, you know.
Absolutely. It's just a constant evolution. You know, but I also too, like, not every parent feels that like feeling of I can't miss a moment. Like, some people do need their independence, and that's great too. You know, like I recently interviewed Jessica Caldas, and like her episode will have come out before yours. And, you know, she was talking about like going away for like a week or two and how much she just desperately needed that to like feel like herself again, you know? And so I don't know. I just think it's so much like,
no, it's so different.
Reflection, I mean, and
100%. I mean, some people, they don't even want to leave their kids for that 1 or 2 hours, you know?
Exactly.
They want every bit of the baby and every bit of the young age to, you know, be around. And some people need that, you know, they need that, those job hours. So, you know, childcare works better for them. And it has, like, you know, whatever feels right has to, like, you have to go with your instinct with this, because you know yourself best, and that's the only way it's going to work.
Yes. So
we know our tolerances and our priorities best.
We do, or if we don't, we should start there, I think, rather than like looking outward, you know,
because
basically, listeners, there's no perfect solution.
No.
And what works for Sara might not work for you, you know. And I think too, like, you know, privilege is definitely a big part of this conversation.
Yes.
Because there's lots of artists who have kids and have a full-time job because they have to support their family. And so then where do you fit your art in, you know?
Yeah. For sure. 100%. You know, you have to work around how you feel. And then the other, like the first one is what you're saying. Exactly. Mm-hmm. It has to be what will practically work for your family.
Yep.
You know, first things first.
Yep. Okay. So with all that said, I feel like recently, Sara, I've seen some like big things that you've been doing. Things where I know you're not just stuck at home. You're out doing these like artist talks and collaborations and like all these amazing things. And in particular, one of the things I've noticed is, you know, you kind of shared a lot about working in a home studio where you're making kind of small work on paper, but it seems like you've been making some big work lately, textile work, murals. So talk about that a little bit, because there are these like places that you're kind of pushing out into and maybe pushing yourself as an artist and, you know, to take up more space. Maybe you could talk about some of those recent projects and things.
Yeah. I mean, it was incredible for me because, like I said, post baby is just very hard. Mm-hmm. I'm so silly. I had like these absurd iron deficiencies that I didn't know about. Mm-hmm. And I didn't figure it out with Marzia. And I think it was pretty bad then too, where so at least with me and most of the females in my family, mom side, if iron's very low, we can't sleep. Mm-hmm. And it's like you get extra anxious and you don't know where it's coming from because mm-hmm. you don't really feel anxious in your mind, but you're like jerky and you keep waking up, you can't sleep for nights. So I think both times it was that as well, which played a part in how hard I felt it was. It is hard anyway. After Tufan, Sandeep and I had started collaborating. We'd started collaborating way before. Like, I think post-Marzia, actually, I started because I thought it was such a great idea for us to work together. When you have a baby, you feel like everything's sort of sinking, like you, all the stuff that you work towards, now what you'll lose and everything will go away and then you'll have to build on it again. Mm-hmm. But working with another artist, and Sandeep's a mom as well, mm-hmm. so it was such a great feeling to be connected in a way, you know, mm-hmm. when you feel least connected.
Gets it.
Yeah, I know she gets it exactly. Yeah. And Sandeep's just awesome. She's just hilarious. And we had such an amazing time when she was offered this show at this gallery in Coquitlam, Evergreen Gallery. And she got the curator to speak to me because she said she wanted to do a two-person show. So she sort of, you know, pulled me into it.
Awesome.
And we had these drawings that we'd done on our own, this collaboration. And because we both recently started working with textiles, we decided it would be a good idea to work with textiles. And the gallery had a ceramic studio. So we thought, okay, we'll do ceramics as well. And we
can, my gosh,
make a more immersive show with all of this stuff. And it just, it was like a back and forth where we were, you know, constantly discussing. And Catherine, the curator, is incredible. We were all sort of, she was also a recent mom.
In fact, amazing.
She discussed the show with us. She went on mat leave and then she came back and then the show sort of, so it was like over a period of a few years. And I guess you could say our collaboration, Sandeep and my collaboration, started with Marzia and then it culminated into a show by the time I had Tufan. So it was post Tufan and I really needed that same thing of being feeling connected, you know.
Yes.
The one time I felt desperate to get out and be connected to other humans is post my kids, you know.
Yes.
That first year.
Yes.
It's the when the sinking
yeah.
feeling is like you're like, you know, dropped off the planet or something.
Yes.
So it was incredible. It was so exciting because Sandeep and I have a tendency of sort of like very, very smoothly going back and forth with things, you know,
mm-hmm.
what we're thinking about, where we want to take the show, where we want to take the work. We seem to have this trust. Somebody
mm-hmm.
at some point, I think I read somewhere that it's sort of like a good collaboration is like telepathy. And that's
mm.
how I felt, you know,
mm.
it's like
amazing,
smooth that way. And because we've both, she's done a lot of murals, but I've also done murals. So we decided to get a mural into the gallery, which was also great because, you know, murals seem to be a little more lowbrow, I guess. But
yeah.
Bringing it into a gallery space was exciting. I think one of my friends actually asked us at the talk what the most fun thing about the show was, and I was like driving back and forth to the gallery because we just laughed like mad through that journey. It was like a good 45-50 minute drive. We just crack up,
amazing,
laughing with the most ridiculous things, going hysterical. So yeah, there is something to be said about, you know, artist collaborations, connecting with other artists on that
yeah.
on that level.
Yeah.
Because at least my experience of an art community back in Pakistan, somehow post-college, what I saw around me was more competitiveness.
Mm.
And it's not for me. At
mm-hmm.
all. I enjoy like a more nurturing environment, more
mm-hmm.
I guess a more motherly environment, you
yeah.
know, where you're more mothers to each other than anything else. And that's where I find comfort and joy. Getting together with my female friends is like the best, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And for listeners who don't know Sandeep, she was actually on the podcast.
Yes.
I looked it up. It was episode 91.
Yes.
So if you haven't heard of her amazing work, another Vancouver-based artist, check that episode out and Sandeep's work. Sarah, can you tell me about these big textile pieces? I have them pulled up right now. They're kind of arranged in this like tunnel. So you know, the closest ones are like the furthest out. And then as you walk through them, you're kind of funneled into what looks like a central like mural.
Yes.
Did you collaborate on the textile pieces? They read as like banners almost. They're
mm-hmm.
so beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. We wanted to create this sort of what do you call it? You know how like in palaces they had those big banners,
yeah.
and in
like an
shrines,
aisle, there's
like an aisle, exactly.
Yeah.
Or in shrines you have these, like a the you know, like at the far end of the wall, you have some kind of a deity or some kind of statue. We were trying to create a sort of like a space that honors these things that we like into ordinary things people around us are doing, you know, the mothering people around
like
us
everyday
are
heroes kind of
okay. You know, people who are weird and eccentric and embracing it and you know, living life to the fullest, whatever that means to them, you know. So it was supposed to be like we were trying to create like an, it started with want to create an army of weirdos, and then it sort of went from that to, you know, a space where we sort of honor these weirdos. And by that we meant, you know, all these people around us who literally carry the burden of the world and get no credit for it. It's, you know, all these horrible people getting all this credit, and the people who are actually moving this this world forward don't, you know. So it was about that. So these panels that you see, what we decided was that I'll take I'll take one of my creatures, human hybrid creatures that I've created in the past, and turn them into a textile, and take one of hers and turn it into a textile. And she was supposed to take one of mine and take one of hers and then create it, create these textiles. So it was sort of like a, because we both create these human animal hybrids, and have created a sort of like a sharing of those and then turning them into these textiles.
So she created a drawing and you took that figure.
Took that drawing and then
And you kind of like pre-decided on a size, I'm assuming.
Yes.
And you were like, I'm just gonna sew this figure.
Yes, exactly.
Oh my god. Okay. As a textile artist, I'm like I'm working on a piece right now where I'm doing paper piecing and like small hand applique for the first time. And it's like hard. Like there's like a learning curve. And I'm just like, this is taking me forever. Like I've been working like hours on this piece. So for you to just be like, yeah, I just like decided to do a textile piece, and it's like this amazing applique banner figure with all this texture. I'm like, what?
You're probably more like Sandeep, who's very, very respectful of the craft. I'm like, I'll do it like this, and I'll do it like this, and then I'm just doing it. And I'm actually, I like it when things are sort of just stuck, but sort of coming off as well. And
I'm looking at them right now. Which one? Like, there's the tiger.
The
and
tiger
then
and the crocodile.
The crocodile.
Is the
Who did which one? Oh, you made both of those.
I made those. As
they're
you,
amazing.
Probably, you can probably tell the tiger is the one that was Sandeep's drawing.
Yes.
And then the ones at the back, the uterus woman, was she took one of my drawings, and then there's the other one that she did. She says she took both of those from my drawings, but she only took like the silhouette, I think, and then made it her own for both of them. She apparently took both the silhouettes from my drawings, but I feel like she made it so her own, it doesn't even matter.
Oh, they're so good. I'm curious too how you guys worked in terms of, did you have kind of a you had that the army of weirdos or like the unsung labor kind of like the concept of rise, right?
Yes. And like you said, the unsung labor, sorry, I'm cutting you, but yeah, that's where the, you know, idea of ceramics and vessels and sewing and, you know, all this stuff that's associated with women's work also came in.
Yes.
That was another reason for using the mediums that we use.
So did you have the concept and then the work kind of developed, or did you both just kind of start making were you like, let's just start making some stuff and then we'll kind of see what sifts out? Like how did the like logistics of how it came together kind of happen.
Very thankful to Catherine for this, because she did like keep an eye on us and kept, you know how artists sort of just, oh, we'll make something and someday it'll happen.
Yeah.
But she was very, she was on us in the sense that she was checking on us. She was keeping, holding meetings. So we had to show work through that year, you know, we couldn't just be like in our heads, oh, we're making this in our head. It was, it had to be like, you know, an actual, actual photos of the work, or you know, show them. And I was, a lot of the time at the beginning, I was in Pakistan for the first few, two months or so, because Tufan was a baby, so I'd gone back with my mom again. So I did a lot of the stuff, a lot of the work at home. It's just become so much easier now to be in touch with, you know, through video calls and stuff. So Sandeep and I were panicking in the beginning, I won't lie. We had our panic moments and we were like, oh my god, how are we going to do this? But Catherine's support is incredible, and then also that's the thing with moms, right?
You just figure it out.
And then and the support you get
and the
from
support,
another mom is just a whole other story. So we had this idea, and then because we'd done the kind of work we'd done, that was a huge thing as well, you know, the sort of counting on the work we'd done before to know what we'll be able to manage. I'd throw in ideas, she'd throw in ideas, and we'd sort of, we had decided not to do a mural. The mural was going to be outside, I think. And then at one point we could not, we were thinking, oh my God, how are we going to sort of, there's a lot of space. There's only so much work we can do with all of this stuff. And I was like, Sandeep, we need to bring the mural back. It'd be so much fun to do the, to make actual work together, you know, side by side, which we aren't getting to do because, you know, time constraints and all of that. So then we brought the mural in, and so it was like, it was, there was a lot of back and forth, but somehow we also, like I said, somehow we just knew whose strength was what, and we went back and forth on that, you know. She knew what my strengths were, so she, you know, even when we were doing the mural, she'd carry some stuff for me, and then there's certain things were my strengths, and I'd, you know, pick up from where she left or back, you know. Drawing is my thing, so I'd be very quick with drawing, and then Sandeep's very precise with lines and stuff, so she'd do patterning, you know. So there was a lot of that, you know, carrying carrying each other wherever possible.
I love it so much. I'm like, part of me is like, we should just have a whole episode that's you guys talking about this show and Catherine can come on. But I think it's
Sandeep and I can, like, well, the three of us, we can, I want to get together with them again because we can.
It's a phenomenal show. And I just, I love how fearless you were, because just the, you know, the breadth of like materials that you brought in. I think it's amazing. You were like, we have access to ceramics, let's make some ceramics. I don't know. It's just like the playfulness and experimentation, I think, is amazing. And I love that you kind of used the support that you got from each other to like, let that be a place where you could take some risks, you know?
Yeah, 100%. Even Sandeep was shocked at my taking on ceramics. She was like, okay, this, she was like, this I can't take on right now. And I was like, no, this is the time I can do this. I'm going to do it. Because I think also I was feeling unnerved with everything that was happening at home with a little baby. So I need to really get everything out.
Oh, and the ceramics are so good.
The ceramics were quite a source of joy for me and kept me grounded in a way. Because it was, when something is a challenge, you really have to focus on it, right? So it took me away from whatever I was worrying about, and I just put a jam packed in there. And I've also, I don't know, I've reached a point where I feel like just do whatever brings you joy and never think about where it's going to land you, because it's going to land you exactly where the universe has decided for it to land you. So I don't think about any of that anymore. I just focus on the joy, and then whatever is meant to be for the work will happen, you know? Like Amazing. I said, I'm a turtle. I'm here to stay. Keep going.
I think turtles, if anything, know how to lean into their comfort zone, you know, what makes them happy. Oh my gosh, Sara, I could talk to you forever. I feel like I can't believe it's been an hour. So I do want to wrap us up just to be respectful of your time. I like didn't even get to any of these questions on my list, but that's okay. This was so great.
You can keep going, but I'm also worried about your baby at home.
I know. So Sara and I both have kids homesick today. Of course, the day that we try to record this interview. Well, I am going to consider that part two and talk more about collaboration. But for now, I'm going to wrap us up with our final five. So these are just five questions for our listeners to get to know you a little bit better. No pressure to, you know, have the best answers. Just kind of what feels good to you in the moment. So who is your biggest art crush?
Oh my God, Miyazaki. I love Miyazaki. He's a huge crush. Like, you know, I'm not good at repeating books or what do you call them? Movies and stuff. But Spirited Away, Castle in the Sky, House Moving Castle, Ponyo, all of those I can watch. I'm excited that Tufan's going to go older and then I can watch them all over again.
We've had a lot of fun with those in our house. We actually have a cat named Kiki. So. You know, after
that.
The witch.
She's the best.
Yes, totally. Okay, what is a favorite place you like to travel or a dream trip you'd like to go on?
Oh, both of us love a hot beach near the equator. Mm. So that's our anywhere, a hot beach near the equator. Loved Mexico. I really want to go to Tunisia too, though. I don't know why that's been on my mind more recently.
Okay. And you mentioned a book, you mentioned 100 Years of Solitude previously in our conversation, but I'm curious if there's either a different book or you can stick with that one or a film that you just feel like has been a big inspiration for you, something that you've kind of gone back to and that you think about a lot.
I love so many books because I take them so seriously. I only read fiction. I believe far more in fiction than what's supposedly fact. Mm. But the one I'm reading at the moment is called Against the Loveless World by Susan Okunkova. It's beautiful. It's about a Palestinian woman and how she sort of has to move from here to there constantly. And the title is from a James Baldwin novel. Mm-hmm. And I love James Baldwin. Mm-hmm. So I was even more excited when I found that connection. So
I've seen this book. I recognize the cover. I think this is on my TBR, actually.
Yes.
So
I loved your bit about reading that
yes.
you did in your recent episode. I do the same because for me, I can't leave any kind of, you know, anything I start, I'm very slow with everything, but mm-hmm. then I just keep it going in that slowness, you know?
I think as my kids have grown up a little bit, reading has been something I've been able to bring back in, like for myself. And my God, it's been such a joy to.
It's such a joy.
I love reading.
Even if like you can do like a little bit. Yeah. Slow is fine.
Yeah.
But
absolutely.
As long as it's there. My mom saw me running recently and she was shocked because she hadn't seen me running in a very long time. So I can't do anything fast.
Turtles don't run.
Turtles don't run. And this was because my son had woken up from his nap. That's the only reason.
I love it. Okay, what is your favorite meal?
Oh, palau. So palau is rice and some kind of, it can be anything, chicken or any kind of meat or potatoes or peas. But I like murg palau the most, which is chicken and rice.
Okay. And Sara, who do you want to give a shout out to who supports your work?
I couldn't do this without my parents in Pakistan. I could not have done it without my parents. And since I've been here and now, like then I was a kid. So that's fine. Your parents. Mm-hmm. Now I'm an adult. So
yeah.
his support means all the more. And not just like, you know, I couldn't do this without him. Like literally, like he does my website, you know, and he reads all my emails because I don't trust my writing. He sometimes read my Instagram, you know, the little caption.
Yeah, I love that.
So I couldn't. If you want a more fun response, though, like my community here, like you know, most of these people, like they've really done wonders for my career. I've mentioned Sandeep, but Penny Lane and Danielle, the jealous curator. Even other friends that I've made through Thrive, we have like a little art club. We get two of my friends, we get together and make stuff. We made like a whole embroidered hanging over the summer, which we've been working on for years. So they all came to Thrive.
Oh, awesome.
All of them came from this full circle.
Yep, that virtual community can really do wonders. Yeah. You know, you can't knock it. Amazing. Well, I'm just so inspired by the work that you make and, you know, the way that you're navigating the world. And I think this episode is going to speak to a lot of people. So last but not least, where can folks connect with you? Like, can you tell us your Instagram handle, your website? I always like to have you say that, even though it'll be linked in everything.
Of course, yes. I'm probably most active on Instagram. It's at mindforking. And then there is my website, which is sara-khan.com.
Okay.
sara-khan.com, yeah. Sara-khan is a very common name everywhere. Yeah. So I have mind forking for that.
Well, Sara, thank you so much for a great conversation.
Well, thank you so much, Kaylin. That was wonderful. Thank you.
The Artist Mother podcast is curated and produced by Kaylin Butine. Music by Josh Middleton. Editing and mixing by John M. Butine. Please visit www.artistmotherpodcast.com for episode notes and to find out how you can further support this podcast.